Today, we have David and Aaron Leverton of the Reunited States documentary.
Listen in as celebrities and amazing people share how they use their influence to change the world. Dive into their stories and discover their passion to keep living a legacy.
Today, we have David and Aaron Leverton of the Reunited States documentary, and we're going to have all kinds of discussions. I've also got my bride here with us because we got a couple, and we're going to be talking about just their story, and it's an amazing story. So I know you're looking forward to it and going to hear a lot. David and Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. Good to be back in Texas, albeit virtually.
That's right. That's right. Now, you guys, are you from Dallas or did you always live here? I know you kind of moved abroad, which is part of the story, but.
Both of us grew up in Texas, in West Texas, actually.
I'm a Midland boy. She's outside Amarillo, a little town called Canyon. If you've been out to Paladura Canyon, one of the wonderful spots of America, that's Aaron's backyard.
All right. So did you ever do like the, what was it? The passion play or?
No, the Texas.
Are you kidding?
The Texas.
I wanted to be in that show growing up. I loved it.
Really? My dad was in that show. Yeah. Really? He was a trick roper in that show.
Oh, that's cool.
Her jaw is on the ground right now. She is like you have become.
Now we're really starstruck.
We'll actually be there in a couple of weeks because her family, her mom grew up in that area. So.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. Well, enjoy the sunset for me.
Yeah.
Will do.
It is. It's so pretty. Now we're going to talk about a documentary that you guys recently did called The Reunited States, of just bringing the country back together again. And it's an amazing story. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Kind of tell me where did this start? Like, first of all, how long have y'all been married? And give us a little background here.
Go, Dave.
So Aaron and I have been married for almost 14 years. We met up in D.C. I was working in the Bush administration and Aaron was sleeping on somebody's couch because she had just moved to town and she was looking for a job. And then she started, I think, working for a lobbyist and then worked for a member of Congress in Texas or something. I was deep into politics during that time. Aaron was, I think, just kind of bored and looking for something to do and ended up in D.C. or something. And so she still doesn't have much of a political bone in her body. Which is a good thing. I call that a compliment these days. It's more pure. We lived in a lot of places, lived in East Tennessee for a while where I went to college and lived in Dallas for about 6 years. The journey itself, you know, kind of how we ended up in this movie, was kind of our life's journey in many ways. You know, I had spent over a dozen years in politics in different forms and fashions. And during the 2016 election, began to see our political divisions beginning to tear our country apart. I was seeing families turning against itself. I was seeing communities begin to fear and hate each other. Neighbors not speaking. And, you know, there was a shift happening and the shift I was seeing was more violence. We've kind of always had political disagreements and such, and there have been definitely violent times throughout history, but during my lifetime, I really had not seen this turn to violence where I saw blood being shed in the streets over political differences in 2016. And it was around that time that Aaron, in our house in Dallas, not too far from you guys, just showed up one night and just out of the blue said, "Hey, if we didn't have kids or a mortgage, what would you want to do in the morning? What's your dream?"
Yeah.
And it's not something I'd really ever thought of before. And I just answered her and I'll let her kind of respond kind of what she thought. But I said, "I want to do something to help bring unity to America." And she just kind of looked at me like, "What the heck did you just say?"
Is this like the kids' prayer at night? Like, I want world peace.
Yeah.
It's a world peace. But it was also very profound when he said it because I don't know. I think that we all have to some degree a destiny to fulfill. And when we tap into what that is and we say it out loud, I think there's really power in those words. And so it was kind of a magical sort of spiritual moment where Dave was speaking something that he was kind of made to be a part of.
Yeah.
So really, honestly, from that moment forward, things really shifted in our lives, because suddenly we were going one direction and suddenly it was like, and we're going to go this way. And we stayed up late that night, just kind of talking about the words that came out of his mouth and what would that look like? Where would you begin? What would be the first step to bringing unity to this country when we're hitting each other over the head with huge sacks of rocks? You know, it's like, we are broken. So that was really the first, I would say, step on the journey that we're still on today.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, and it's, you know, it's amazing how times in your life, just something happens that changes the whole course direction of your life, right? And this was obviously one for you guys, because you didn't just talk about it, right? What is that? You know, a goal without action is just a dream. But you guys did something. What did you do?
So that was 2016. We really started to really dive in and learn and study and investigate what is the root cause of division. That was the question that we were asking. And there was no clear answer. I mean, you can watch documentaries and read books till you're blue in the face. And everyone, there are many, many theories. And there are many, many points of view being shared on all sides. But we really felt that the only way to get a clear understanding would be, and this took a year for this process to take place. But after some probing, we decided, and some prayer. I mean, I did a 40-day fast to get to this point, but it was just like, what do we do? And it just became very clear. The only way to get an answer to the question would be to go and ask people all across America. And so one morning I woke up at like 4 a.m. and just this, it was almost like a picture popped into my head of us traveling across the country with our kids on an RV, just listening to people's stories and talking to them and gaining, I think, it's one thing to understand something here. It's another thing to experience it and have it become a part of who you are.
Right.
And, you know, experiential learning is something I had been discovering, because we have a child with special needs and she plays a huge role in this as well, of just, you know, shedding the hamster wheel of the things we ought to be doing and venturing off into the uncharted territory of what you were made to do that no one else has done yet. No one has carved that path for you. Right. And so you have to go forge it yourself. And she gave us courage to do that, because she just challenges the status quo in every way possible. So, and she challenges me in every way possible. She's stubborn and hard-headed, but she's amazing. And she's really been a catalyst for us. So that morning I woke up, I had this picture in my head and I was like, we need to do that. We need to sell our house and quit our jobs and buy an RV and take our kids and go live in all 50 states and learn about division. And maybe we can get a clearer picture of what's really broken here.
Just to fix anything, you've got to understand why it's broken. And so we had this grand idea to go and bring unity to America, but as we kind of got into it, we're like, man, we've got no clue what's going on. And we began to see, you know, we kind of live in a bubble here in Dallas. Like, you know,
right,
most of the folks in our neighborhood kind of look like we do. The places we go eat, the places we go shop, the people we socialize with, the people we go to church with, it's a kind of a homogenous group. I think there's a lot more out there that I don't know. And so it was kind of this just nagging curiosity, I think, that drove a lot of it.
Well, you know, and there is a lot of diversity over the country, right? You know, you remember when we had the officers shot in Dallas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, a lot of that started was there was marches down the street. I believe it was the Ferguson shooting, but it was amazing, right? There was on the Dallas news, because we hear throughout the country of just burning and rioting and looting. And in Dallas, there's thousands of people marching for justice. And I remember on the news watching it, there's a bunch of, you know, what we'd call rednecks, right? Bunch of guys with trucks, and I think they had Dixie flags up. And I mean, you're like, and then you see all the marchers coming down the street and you're like, oh crap, this isn't going to be good. And then what happens when they get there, you know, the guys standing around their trucks end up just giving high fives. And I think they may have given them water. And next thing you know, they're all together and they're hugging and they're, and they're praying together, and there's an officer in there praying with them. And it was just, it was so inspiring to go, okay, you know, I know there's issues throughout the country, but in Dallas, it just seems different, right? Now that wasn't the case in 2020. We did have some looting and stuff, but it's like, you know, there's something special here. It's felt like a breeding ground. Not that this is a commercial for Dallas, but just, you know, even with all the diversity, it just felt like a family. And it's like, you know, what's going on here that when we're watching on the news that there's burning and looting and stuff. So,
but you know at the same time, I'll just offer a different perspective on that as well. So, you know, I think living in Dallas is I felt very similar as you did, because, you know, most of the folks that I ran around with, things were going pretty well for, but as I kind of stepped into some of the areas that were traditionally invisible to me about Dallas and neighborhoods I'd never been into,
right,
I found some of the most utter brokenness and, everything from hopelessness and injustice and, issues of racism displayed in many different ways. And, I want to, you know, not gloss over the fact that Dallas is a really rough place for a lot of people. Right. And, you know, a city can be both an amazing place where there's racial reconciliation and healing and, you know, things are going well, and it can be a place that's really a challenging, broken place for other people at the same time. And so many of us live in our own worlds and don't get outside of it much and believe, like I did, that this is the reality. And yes, it is a reality, but it's not the complete reality.
Right. Well, and you know, that's a great point. That's a great point, right? You know, when you hear about this, you're going, well, what's the reason for diversity? And if you ask Facebook, the answer is probably going to be CNN or Fox or CNN, right? You know, well, they're just, you know, they're there to stir us all up. And I'm not going to negate that happens, because you're still aware of it, right? You still see it. You see everybody commenting on it. But the reality is it's so much more, right? As you point out, there's areas where there's just, you know, there's not an advocate. And that's something we speak about a lot, is just everyone needs an advocate. Everyone. And you go into the parts of any city that are invisible to the rest of it, and they need someone there, you know, even if everything seems to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
you know, our job is to go into the dark areas and shine light, right?
Yeah. That's not perfect unless it is for each of us and the least of these, you know, and I think if it's great for some at the expense of others, you know, that's a tough thing. You know, Dallas is going through, you know, massive gentrification, where folks who've lived near downtown for a lot of years, you know, so many people moving to town, it's great for them. So, look at all the redevelopment. There's now 3 cupcake shops on this street and that kind of deal. And even a
right.
point operated one. I'll miss those. What's that cupcake place, Aaron, we used to go to in Dallas?
Sprinkles.
Oh my gosh. The Sprinkles Red Velvet Cupcake.
That's my favorite.
Absolutely special. But you know, it's easy to see. Yeah. What's great for one group, people could be actually destructive with another, and it's hard to see both of them. But you know, Aaron and I, through this journey across America, we carry those perspectives, you know, in our hearts, and it took my worldview was here. I thought this was the complete worldview of America and things like that. And I began to see that my worldview wasn't wrong. It was just really incomplete. And there's so much more than meets the eye often.
So yeah. As you went into all of these different towns, what did you do to be able to see, like to really get in there, to see the heart of the people and understand where the diversity is and ask those tough questions and be in the deeper part, I guess you could say?
Well, first of all, as we were traveling, we were looking for brokenness. Like we were literally looking for places where things are not going well.
Yeah.
And we didn't know to ask the question about diversity. Our theory going into this was that our division was rooted in our political system and that we needed to bring Republicans and Democrats together and that would solve it. And then we very quickly, like quickly as in day one, realized that theory is not only incomplete. It's flat out wrong. The root politics has nothing to do with the root of our division. It goes so much deeper than that. And so we began, not because we were looking for it, we just began to learn that our division is rooted in what we believe about human value, about ourselves and about one another. And so, and I didn't know, here's the thing is we say we believe things cognitively, but where we really believe things is here. So if I'm driving down the road and I see a black man walking down the street with a hood and I lock my car door, for example, that's not a decision I made here. That's a decision that flowed out of some deep hidden crevice of me. And I could not tell you, based on my lived experience, why I would do that. I've never been attacked by a black man. I have never been threatened by a black man. And yet I have this seemingly like almost visceral response to a black man in my presence and what it causes, how it causes me to physically react. And so these are, I mean, they call this subconscious bias, meaning it's beneath the conscious. You don't know it's there until you respond to in a situation without thinking. And so that was something that shocked me. Cause I mean, when I hear the word racist, like let's rewind to 2018, January, when we started our trip, never in a million years would I have said, oh yeah, I'm a racist. Like I have racist beliefs flowing through my veins. No way, no way. But then as I began to meet people of color who were brave enough to share their story with me, like the woman in the, have you guys seen the film?
We haven't seen it yet.
Okay, there's a woman in the film who we meet literally on day one of our trip in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this is to answer you, this is a long answer to your question, Catherine. But we went in her office in Tulsa to learn about a massacre that took place in Tulsa, which you may have heard of recently. It's called the Tulsa Race Massacre. They just celebrated the 100th anniversary of this event.
Probably not as much a celebration. Yeah,
celebrated is the wrong word, but they just marked the 100th anniversary of this catastrophic event. I would say it's one of the darkest days in our history. And so we went into her office because we were hoping to learn about that event, but instead she chose to tell us her own personal story of how she lost her baby in the delivery room, her first baby, due to lack of care, due to racism. And when you watch the film and listen to the story, I think our response is, well, how do we know lack of care was based on her skin color? But when you listen to her story, it's pretty undeniable that that is the reason why she lost her baby. And we also have an episode on our podcast in which we interview her about that story. But what happened in that moment was more than her telling me a story. We had an exchange in which I'm looking into her eyes and I'm seeing my three children in the three delivery rooms where I was with them. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, pigmentation and lived experiences and all the differences between her life and my life up to that point didn't really matter, because we were connecting in the delivery room as mothers. And there's something like, you guys, do you guys have kids?
Yeah. We do.
Okay. So there's something that surpasses like what we share in common in terms of, oh, I love to play golf. You like golf? When you move into this realm of markers in our identity, like mom or sister or daughter, it connects us beyond all the other things. It's so much deeper and so far less superficial than like a like or dislike you share in common. So I'm looking into this woman's eyes and my soul is being knit with her soul in this moment. Because I'm literally going back and reliving a moment with her in which I get to look into the eyes of my firstborn and she doesn't.
Yeah.
And that sent me on a soul searching journey to answer the question, how did it get this way? Was this a one-off situation in which a woman was in a room with a bad doctor and a bad nurse, or are we dealing with a system? Like, is this widespread? Right. You know, these are the questions I was asking, because I think it's really easy to look at the world through our lived experience and be like, oh, they're just playing the race card, you know? But is that true? And so I think if we're brave, I mean, it takes a lot of bravery to go back and say, I'm willing to rewrite my belief system on, like, across the boards on this subject. And so that's what I had an invitation to do that day. Dave and I both did. I mean, we were wrecked after that day, and it really set us on a course.
You know, you're not, as you mentioned, right? When you're having that discussion, you're not black, you're not white, you're not rich, you're not poor, you're not Republican or Democrat, you're not anything. You're two moms.
Right.
And you're like, what if the doctors hadn't let me have my child because of my circumstances?
Yeah. I mean, that woman labored in a hospital in America alone for 9 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like a third world country. And she's not, it's not like she's, you know, 60 or 70 years old. She's around our age, you know?
Right.
So it brought it home for me, because I think also generationally, it's like, oh, well, of course it was like that a generation ago or two generations. Like, if this woman had been my mom's age or my grandmother's age, but she wasn't, you know? And so that I was like looking into the eyes of a peer and seeing a situation that happened to her in a country that I thought was good and just. And so that narrative got challenged in a way that I just was not anticipating. And I think that begins to tap into identity for us of like, well, I thought we're good. I thought we're the best. I thought we're just, you know?
Yeah.
And the hard thing to do is to take a long look at it and say, well, maybe we're not. Maybe we're not what we claim to be. And in order to become what we claim to be, we have to acknowledge that we haven't been.
Right.
And that's hard, you know? It's hard.
It's that cognitive dissonance that challenges these kind of deeply held beliefs, and you're faced with a fact that directly challenges them. What do you do? We can ignore those facts and those stories to maintain kind of the order and peace in our lives, or we can allow our perspectives and worldviews to be undone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could have easily written her off, but we really just had such a drive for curiosity and for the, I mean, you'll see in the film, which is now free on Amazon Prime right now, which is always nice. I like free movies instead of paid movies. Now the director, he probably doesn't like it a whole lot, because I bet he doesn't make any money off of it anymore. But nevertheless, that's not my problem. But you know, you just have that opportunity to connect with her heart, and you'll see in the film, it just, we could not write her off. This is a fellow human being, a sister of ours who grew up not too far from us in Oklahoma. Right. And she is just pouring out her heart, and she's crying. And it's like, we would never be the same after that.
Yeah. She is my hero. And one of my, I would say, I count her as one of the people in my life who has played maybe one of the biggest roles.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we had maybe 30 minutes together that day. So, yeah.
Wow. It's an amazing story, though, where, and amazing is not the right word, right? You don't want to use amazing for someone's hardship, because that's not, but it's very impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And just heart-wrenching. It's like, man, that's another human, right? That's someone my age. It's someone I could have gone to school with. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they've gone through that, you know, the image that comes to mind is like the, you know, of when we're talking about, you know, kind of the invisible people or parts of town or whatever, you know, I've just got this image of like, you know, the mayor or the preacher, something like that, who's at the image of everybody and is in front of everybody and everybody loves, yet come to find out at home, you know, is abusing, you know, their children or something like that. And it's like, you know, the children can't speak out. And unless there's an advocate to go in and go, wait, you know, not everything is as it seems, right? And, you know, there's a reason this child is reaching out and is hurt and is angry, and others are angry because it's not being loved the way it should. And it's not being loved the way we're being loved. So we assume that everybody's being loved the way we are.
Right.
And the reality is that's not always the case. And when it's not, you know, That's what you guys did. So you sold your home. You got in an RV for how long?
14 months.
14 months.
There's a 90% downsize.
Yeah.
So real quick, I'm just curious, what's it like having a special needs child in an RV?
You know what? It's not a whole lot different than having a special needs child in a house. It's she was, and I would say all three of them were really, they were so incredibly flexible and resilient to do that. Just, I mean, for them, I mean, they were 2, 5, and 6 when we got on the RV. So
yeah,
we did kindergarten on the road, and it was, I think in the kid world, it's like everybody's dream. Cause you're like, I'm getting to spend 24 hours a day with the two most important people in the whole universe, which is mom and dad. And now, I mean, they're too big and they wouldn't be as interested because they like their friends more than they like us. So, you know, it was just a sweet little window of time. Yeah. They did awesome. The people who were a train wreck were us.
So, well, but your family and your kids also got to see America, right? Yeah. I mean, who gets that opportunity? So now they're young. They don't realize the awesomeness that just, you know, incurred of just seeing the country. And you, did you guys go into all 50 states or?
We did. We really tried to hit one state per week. And so we kind of had like Moving Monday, we'd move to a new state, and it was a breakneck speed. I wouldn't do it again. I don't think so. It was just really, it was taxing. Because you're constantly, you know, when you have a house or an apartment or something, you kind of know where it's going to be each week. It's not going to change. Right. You don't need to look for a new place to park your house and things like that. And the RV world is constantly mobile. It's constantly unstable. And so I was always, you know, where are we going to go here? Where are we going to stay? Do they have availability? Do they have a place where we can hook up our little tank so we can take showers and go to the bathroom and stuff like that? And it was a tough pace, but we also didn't want to spend the rest of our lives on a road. So we really just kind of committed to trying to do 50 states in 52 weeks was kind of our goal.
Yeah. Now, David, I see that you're the logistics guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my stuff. I had a degree in college in logistics. And
transportation. Okay. So that's making sense off now. Yeah. And so what are some of the things that it's like, man, we heard the call and we took this journey. What are some of the surprises that came along the way that you're like, man, I wish, you know, things that would have been helpful to know yesterday, right? But also just surprises that you're like, we had no idea. And it was just such an amazing blessing that it wasn't even on the radar when we started this journey. So what are some of those things?
Man. I go on a long time. You know, one of those, we were talking with a Native American, and that, you know, that is a group that is maybe the most invisible group of people in this entire land. You know, there is no march for Native lives to matter. There are no TV shows featuring Native American. What's the Native American perspective here? There's no talking heads on the news. It is almost completely invisible to the 90%+ of the country.
Right.
And I'd say we were transformed by spending time with Native Americans on Native American land and otherwise. And we just really deeply connected with one gentleman early on. Just, he was just dapper. I mean, just he always wears a hat, and he's just got a great little beard and a suit. He looks amazing. And and just fell in love with him. He took us to the casino that his tribe runs, and we had drinks and food at Margaritaville restaurant. It was a fun little evening. But as we're developing this relationship with him, he goes, you know, your Declaration of Independence refers to me as a merciless Indian savage. I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
No, that's the document. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what ours says. I don't know the one you've been reading. So just look it up. And I got my phone out and looked down and scrolled down, and man, it does. It refers to him, the Native people, and context as merciless Indian savages. And so just that, again, you know, kind of like I said earlier, is these beliefs in what I thought America was. And, you know, the founding documents are like these infallible texts. I think, you know, you go to the National Archives, you kind of have like Moses's tablets of the Ten Commandments. You've got the Declaration of Independence. You've got the Constitution. And those things kind of all live at a similar level for me throughout my upbringing. And, you know, so that there could be something that offensive to refer to the host people of this land who had been entrusted to this land, who had stewarded this land for thousands of years, that we show up and within, you know, a couple hundred years, we're referring to them as savages. You're subhuman. You don't deserve to live. You don't deserve the land you're on. You're a savage. You're below, you're beneath me. I will dehumanize you through words and through heart postures, which then will allow me to run you off your lands, to massacre, things of that nature. And that was something I had no clue that in this founding document of ours, that there could be two juxtapositions where there's on top this all men are created equal and these great words of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and then lower, merciless Indian savage.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it was funny, funny in a weird sense. You know, about a month ago, we just moved into this house and we're sitting there and we make breakfast one Saturday morning, and I reach in and I pull out, you know, the Aunt Jemima, because we're having pancakes, right? And it's actually got Aunt Jemima on it. And then I kid you not, I reach in the fridge, and of all things, it's Land O'Lakes butter. So it's got the Indian lady on it. And I'm like, wow, I need to take a picture of these. These are relics, right? And it's kind of this haha funny moment. And then as I'm sitting there, I was like, okay, I don't get it. Like, why are they relics? Like, why is this, you know, we're changing the names of baseball teams and we're changing all this stuff. And it just seems kind of silly. And then I'm sitting there and it just hits me. I'm like, okay, so let's say some guy comes into our home, beats me down, takes my family, takes my home, puts me on the streets. And years later, I'm still on the streets and I can walk past my home and I can see him in the window with my wife and kids, right? And I'm still there. And then, you know, a few years later, they're like, okay, everything's good, everything's fine. We're all gonna be okay. We're gonna be friends. I try to forgive. I'm like, okay, I just wanna move on, right? It's gone. I'm just going to move on. And then that guy saying that we're friends and looking me in the eye saying we're friends decides to put out, you know, something that I use every single day, right? Like butter or like syrup with my breakfast. And he puts an emblem on there that doesn't seem all that in your face, yet is a daily reminder to me that someone's got a thumb on me, holding me down, right? And I can walk past the house and it's like, I'm trying to move on. I'm trying to forgive. And yet every single day I'm reminded, you know, you look at that Declaration of Independence and you hear, you know, every time you look at it or see it and America's praising it. And it's like, but I'm called a savage in there. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I look at Aunt Jemima and it's like, it's a slave woman on top of syrup that I use every day. Or it's an Indian, right, on the Land O'Lakes. It's an Indian with all this land, yet their land was taken from them, right? And it's like, we're just rubbing it right in your face every single time you use this, that we took this from you and there's nothing you can do about it. And I'm like, you know, so I threw it in the trash. I was like, you know, we'll buy the new one that doesn't have that. Hmm. But, you know, that was just my epiphany of going, crap, you know, I've never slowed down to think about this. But if that was me and somebody did that to me, how would I feel, right?
Or think about if like a family of color is staying with you guys and they have little kids and they go to pour their syrup and there's this slave woman sitting on the top of the syrup. It's like, you know,
am I a mascot?
Yeah. Like what universe is this that we're living in? But I think these are the sorts of things that have been hit, what I say, I call it hidden in plain sight. You know, yeah. These are the sorts of emblems that we've used to reinforce the lie of human, like a hierarchy of human value, that one human life could be less valuable or more valuable than another human life. And that gets perpetuated and almost immortalized in these, you know, food brands or sports teams. And so dismantling them is important, but I think it's also important how we dismantle them, that we go about owning that story of how that came to be. Like Land O'Lakes, for example, that is the word Minnesota means land of many lakes. And there was such a displacement of the Dakotas and the Lakota tribes in that land that, I mean, they were put in concentration camps in the place that they believe is like their Garden of Eden. And so you talk about sticking a knife into someone and twisting it, to put a Native woman on any product that says Land of Lakes, Minnesota, which is their homeland, which they were banished from. I mean, we are talking like they actually, the governor of Minnesota had an event not too long ago in which they marched as a people back into the state and welcomed them back in officially and apologized, and a public apology. But even that doesn't quite do it justice, because it's like, how do you fix something that broken? How do you unring that bell? And so, you know, doing it thoughtfully and with honor and love and really thinking about, okay, what would it, if this was me, what would I need for this to be made right? And not just check the box, you know? Those are the kinds of things that we've really wrestled with on our journey, since our journey, because it's really, and you can't have that conversation without someone from those tribes in the room, because they're the ones who can say, well, this is what I need in order to feel whole, or in order to feel like, I don't know, some form of justice.
And so, I think it's important to think about, because you've got the cancel culture that, you know, that you've got. And it's easy to just kind of check this box. Oh, they're not called the Redskins anymore. Now it's the football team from Washington. Everything's cool now, right? We're good. Or we took the image off of the piece of food or something like that. And, you know, it's so easy to fall into these kind of box checking activities and to help people think that, man, we're progressive now. We're cool. We got it down. We're woke now. And you know, it's often just window dressing. Now, it's not that it's not some level of progress, but most of the time I find it just kind of stops there. We did the public thing. We did the slogan, we did the marketing deal. Now let's go on back our daily lives.
Yeah. So what do you guys think moving forward? What has all of this taught you on moving forward, and how can each one of us make small changes just in our, like where you're planted, what are things that you learned from all of this that we can do to help with the root problem?
There's not a one size fits all, here's what I do. I think everyone lives in a different community. Everyone has different gifts. Everyone's at different life stages. But for me, it would be living life with a heart posture of an open heart and an open mind. I will walk into every situation, every relationship, every space with an open heart and an open mind to learn. I will listen, and I will allow myself to be shaped by someone else's reality. And just to try and go through life with eyes wide open.
Yeah.
And it things that we may have just driven past in the past, or people we've walked through, a news story we just wrote off as a, you know, as well, they were probably up to no good or something like that. To really begin to ask that question, you know, how did it get this way? What, you know, why did that happen? Is there something deeper here? And just being curious. To me, I would say it's just having a heart posture of just being open-hearted and open-minded, and then being curious. And just opening those eyes and looking and seeing, and everyone will be drawn in different areas, I feel like. And we can all advocate for our brothers and sisters in different ways. But I think there's no prescription. It's a willingness to be transformed by your neighbors and begin to look around. I think a wonderful way is to start with the story of your community. You know, what's the history here? Are there some things that I didn't know about it? You know, for example, people have been growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma for the past 100 years, never aware that there was a race massacre in 1921 that burned 35 city blocks and killed maybe up to 300 people. Mm-hmm. You know, so you start thinking about if you're sitting around in Tulsa in 1975 or, you know, some, you know, why is there all this animosity going around here? Why is that area so kind of poor and broken down and stuff like that? And you just would begin to form these opinions without having an absolute clue of
right. The
story. And there's none of us exist in a vacuum. There has been a story that has led to the things that we are today. And I think it's a wonderful journey to explore that story and find out what our place is in that story. The trajectory has been like this. What can I do to maybe shape and shift that?
Yeah.
Right. And rather than talk about, talk to, right? Mm-hmm. Listen, ask mm-hmm. questions.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that blew me away about this is the fact that, you know, because you started this thinking this may be a political thing.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, right, the executive producers of this movie, Meghan McCain, Van Jones, very opposites, very polarizing personalities, but very opposite personalities. And yet they were involved. Right. They were like, you know, bringing reunited states, which is what this documentary is about. So, you know, our show is, it's called Living a Legacy. It's about celebrities and amazing people. And you know, you guys aren't necessarily household name celebrities, but definitely fall into the amazing people of just using your influence to impact the world around you, right? That's living a legacy, is how am I using my influence today to impact the world around me? And that's exactly what you're doing. And you know, we want to help the world hear this message. So with that being said, how do you want, you know, and David, you've already answered this, but if there's anything else y'all want to say about how we can be living our legacy today as we wrap this up, what would be your thoughts?
One thing I would say is, you know, if there is something that comes up on the news or that you see out, you know, in your community, and the thought that comes into your mind is those people, I would encourage you, I would admonish you and your listeners to never, if that thought comes into your mind, like, well, you know, those people are the problem. Anytime you can dismiss something in that way, you're missing part of the story. And I'm talking like it could be an area of town where you're dealing with abject poverty, drugs. It could be, I mean, a great number of things that we would sort of look at as like societal ills. There is a story that needs to be heard and told. And there are relationships that need to be formed there in order to love that neighbor and that community and to learn from that neighbor and that community. Mm-hmm. There is not a person on this planet that we can't learn from. And I think our daughter Grace has taught me that more than anyone, that there's gold hiding in every human. I'm talking about people who are mass murderers. I'm talking about people who have done atrocious things. To decide that someone is not worth honoring because of something they've done or something they've not done, or because of the biases hiding inside our hearts, which we all have, we just do, then we're missing out on the rest of our own story because we are connected. We are one. And I think the great lie is that we can live our lives apart from one another and be okay. We really need each other. It's not just that I need to hear that story so I can have a deeper understanding. I need to hear that story because that's part of my story. We're connected as children of God, as children who bear the image of Yahweh. There's not a human being out there that I'm not actually connected to.
Absolutely.
And so to write them off and determine them as, you know, whatever bias may pop into my heart at that time is actually me robbing myself of knowing and understanding God's story in the bigger picture. So I would just admonish listeners to really ask. I mean, I've actually prayed for some sort of red flag to pop up in my heart and mind to be raised when I do have a dismissive attitude towards someone, or when I am operating out of bias rather than honor and love, because it's sneaky and you don't realize, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And so the only real way to understand where these things are lurking is not in what we say, which we're very cognizant of, but more in what we do. Right?
Think and do.
Yes. And so there are definitely moments that pop up, I think, especially as parents, when the things that come out of our mouths and the decisions that we make in front of our kids are going to shape not only how they view the world and their other, their neighbor, but also how, you know, where we're short-sighted and missing it ourselves. And so that's a big one for me. Is just constantly challenging myself to be conscious and aware of where I'm being short-sighted in loving and honoring my neighbor.
Yeah.
Driving is another one. You know, when you start cussing somebody out on the road, am I being the bad driver here? Like, and why am I hating this person? Maybe they're having the worst day. You just don't know. And
right. So now you're stepping on toes though. driving and honking and stuff like that. So where can people find resources that want to move forward? And then, of course, David, you mentioned we can watch it on Amazon Prime right now, Reunited States.
I'm watching it.
Where's some resources that we can find if people feel like, what do I do now?
The Reunited States website has really partnered with a lot of different organizations that are doing work to bring people together from across political and socioeconomic and racial differences. There are some cool things happening where you can, maybe you want to be a part of a living room conversation or a dinner party where you're sitting down with someone who you like are polar opposites from politically. It's a lot of fun. It's totally like, it'll mess you up and rearrange you in the best way possible. And so, I would encourage your listeners to go to the Reunited States website.
The website is reunitedstates.tv. I just pulled it up to make sure.
And they've got all kinds of
reunitedstates.tv. All right.
Yeah. It's got a lot of great resources. And you can take a deep dive in any area you want to. And they've got some good, they did a good job on that website.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And Ben Recky, the director, he did an incredible job on the film. We're really proud of him. He did
special guy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we thank you so much for your time, David and Aaron, and just for the fact that you're living a legacy. Like, you didn't just think about it and it's like, man, I wish, but you sold your home, you got in an RV, you traveled to all 50 states, and you listened and you asked questions and you share that with us in this amazing documentary. So thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys. Such a pleasure getting to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Join us next time for another amazing episode of Living a Legacy.